Thanks for joining us on the Cultured Meat and Future Food Podcast. On this episode, we're excited to have Dr. Aletta Schnitzler of Turtle Tree join us. Dr. Aletta Schnitzler is the Chief Scientific Officer at Turtle Tree. Previously, Aletta held various roles at Merck KGaA across cell therapy bioprocessing and cultured meat R&D and strategy. Aletta received her PhD in 2007 from Boston University School of Medicine in the fields of immunology and neuroscience, focusing on trophic factors that influence immune cell activation, as well as neural differentiation and maintenance of phenotype. Aletta was a speaker at the first CMS event back in 2018 and has been deeply involved in the industry. I had a great conversation with Aletta, and I learned as to why everyone I talk to about Turtle Tree happens to really light up with excitement. Let's jump right in. Thanks for joining us on the Cultured Meat and Future Food Podcast. We're excited to have Dr. Aletta Schnitzler on the show today. Aletta, welcome to the show.
Hi, Alex. It's great to be here.
Aletta, tell us a little bit about your background.
Sure. So my training is in immunology and neuroscience, but the bulk of my career has been spent or was spent at MilliporeSigma, the life science division of Merck KGaA, developing reagents and processes for cell therapy manufacturing. So with that background in cell bioprocessing, I had consulted on and then led the efforts out of Merck's Innovation Center to develop those similar kinds of tools for cell-based meats and dairy. So it's really been a journey focused on, you know, cell biology and how we can create these tools to use cells to our advantage, whether it's for a therapy, for example, a really novel new cancer drug, or now for foods and thinking about the future state of our food system.
That's exciting. And I have fond memories of the first CMS event, the CMS 18, which you were speaking at. Can you tell us a little bit how that experience was?
Yeah. So 2018 was around the time that the Merck Innovation Group was looking toward future foods as a potential area to become involved in. And, you know, given my background in cell biology and bioprocessing and thinking about the anticipated needs of cellular agriculture space, we saw this as a great opportunity to share some of the advancements and also the challenges that we've been learning from cell therapy manufacturing and share those perspectives with the future foods space. And you know, it was really fun to be part of that early conference because we saw that many of the folks in the space now, you know, in cellular agriculture have transitioned from biopharma and are intersecting with people from, you know, fermentation and in the food industry. And so the conference itself was just a great time and forum for sharing initial thoughts, not just around technology, but also policy and consumer perspective. It was really in that conference and that moment talking to just all of these different people from different backgrounds, seeing how passionate people entering this space are. It really solidified my decision to dedicate myself to the field.
We've been hearing a lot about Turtle Tree for quite some time, and it feels like the conversations I have had in the past about Turtle Tree are always from really, really excited individuals. And so, yeah. And I'd love to kind of figure out exactly why that is a little bit later, but can you tell us how you first got involved with Turtle Tree?
Absolutely. So I got to know Max and Feng Ru, the co-founders of Turtle Tree, around 2019, I believe it was, when we were discussing cell culture media and how to transition from biopharma offerings that, you know, companies like MilliporeSigma were developing and offering at the time to something that's more appropriate for cellular agriculture to food grade raw materials. So, you know, even back then, I was impressed with how forward thinking Max and Feng Ru were about future foods and how they saw this as a journey for Turtle Tree and had a plan for what that journey would be. So when the opportunity came a few months ago to join them and be fully dedicated to this field that has sustainability and human nutrition at its core, I really just couldn't resist. So it had been a pleasure getting to know them over the last few years. And then and now, just about a month ago, I joined on full-time as the Chief Scientific Officer for Turtle Tree. So a great opportunity. And yes, a fantastic and very passionate team.
I think maybe that what you were describing of that kind of long-term vision describes that excitement that, you know, people that were familiar with Turtle Tree Labs maybe had when I was originally speaking with them. And so Turtle Tree is a Singapore-based company. The HQ is in Singapore. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yes, yes. It's incorporated in Singapore, but we do have operations not only in Singapore, commercial and R&D operations there, but also have a pilot plant that's being developed in the Sacramento, California area, along with R&D operations in California. And we're also looking to set up a presence on the East Coast in the greater Boston area, which is where I'm located. And that would be fantastic to tap in to the greater Boston ecosystem. It's you know, cellular agriculture is very predominant on the West Coast. It's coming to the East Coast though, and we're hoping to help facilitate that. You know, as a matter of fact, Tufts University got a grant from the USDA for this space. They have a great team of investigators and students and trainees there. So, and all the other talent and technology that's coming out of universities and the startup ecosystem in Boston. So we'd like to be part of that as well.
Do you envision that more cell ag startups will start popping up in the Boston area?
I do. And it's already happening. So I would definitely stay tuned. And this is, I think, also, again, driven by universities like Tufts and David Kaplan's lab, who are making this possible.
Turtle Tree Labs has been known as the company that is using cell ag to create milk. Can you tell us a little bit about what Turtle Tree Labs is doing and the overall mission?
The mission of Turtle Tree is to be really a platform company, creating accessible nutrition that offers a more sustainable and healthy alternative to conventional animal-sourced foods. So about 77% of agricultural lands are used for livestock, yet only a third of our protein intake comes from meat and dairy. So this is just not sustainable. And Turtle Tree and others in this space are working hard to tip that balance in the right direction. And you're correct, the focus is on dairy, not only cell-derived whole milk, which is for sure a longer-term goal of Turtle Tree, but also milk bioactives in the near term. So those are the components of milk that have high nutritional value and performance. An example there would be lactoferrin, the main iron-binding component of milk. And that has important immunological properties. It's both antibacterial and antiviral. It can interfere with some of the cell receptors that viruses use for entry, for example. So this is the kind of, when I say journey, this is the kind of, you know, short-term versus then longer-term vision that the company has around dairy.
Can you shed light on maybe not the first or initial products or maybe some of the potential products that might be coming out of Turtle Tree? And then I guess as a follow-up to that, will we see Turtle Tree branded products on the shelves in the future, or is it more of a B2B approach?
No, we'd certainly like Turtle Tree to become that household name and that trusted source of alternative nutrition and bioactives. And that can be achieved, you know, not only through B2B, but also B2C. We don't want to be kind of hiding behind other food producers. We'd really like to be consumer driven and focused on the consumers. Regarding the pipeline of products, you know, lactoferrin, the example that I gave before, would be one of those early offerings. We also have a partnership around milk oligosaccharides, another bioactive component of milk. Those are short polymers of simple sugars that are present in high abundance in milk, and they have, you know, prebiotic effects and can block pathogens. So they support gut health. And then again, in the longer term, it would be a cell-based whole milk product, which, you know, we also have under development. And then I'd like to mention that we are also interested in the cell-based meats space. And some of that is because of the technologies that we're putting into place we see could support that kind of a food offering as well. So this is something that we have our eyes on.
What's exciting about that is that not only regulation is moving forward in the US, but regulation is very active in Singapore. So it would be very interesting to see a Turtle Tree Labs cell-based meat product in Singapore.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And regulatory is certainly, you know, one of the considerations that we're taking when looking and setting up this pipeline. So we're really taking a very strategic look at, you know, the maturity of technologies, those regulatory considerations, path to scalability around, you know, which products to develop and introduce when. And we're setting up that platform now to support, you know, the short and longer term roadmap of nutritional products that we'll bring to market.
A lot of the cell ag companies kind of come in with a particular niche, so to speak, whether it's like automation or maybe focusing on one type of animal cell or something like that. Is there any, I guess, either announced technologies that Turtle Tree is working on uniquely or kind of differentiating factor for Turtle Tree among some of these other cell ag companies?
You know, again, going back to the journey, this is one of the differentiating factors that we have this longer term roadmap that's based on a platform. So rather than having an end product in mind, like a particular species and structured product, we are aiming to set up a platform so that we can, you know, bring forward in this very, you know, time-based and strategic way a variety of offerings. And I think that part of our differentiating factor here is not only a few key enabling technologies that we have, proprietary technologies around scaffolding and cell lines that will give us an edge, but also the right partnerships at the right time that will also help us, again, develop this platform, manufacturing and development platform, to continuously feed these high nutritional content bioactives and ultimately whole milk and even potentially whole, you know, meats to the market.
I was recently, I guess, re-listening to one of the old episodes, the episode number 4 with Lisa Feria of Stray Dog Capital. And so that was early 2018. And I had asked her, you know, what are some of the biggest challenges in the space? And so she said scaling. And now that Turtle Tree Labs is currently building a pilot plant facility, I believe you mentioned, mm-hmm. What are some of the biggest challenges facing the industry, and what's actually not discussed enough that probably should be?
Yeah, scalability is absolutely one of the biggest challenges that the industry faces. And I think that one thing that's probably not discussed enough and we should start addressing now is accessibility. Certainly the two are intertwined, but ultimately as an industry and as a field, we need to ensure that these food alternatives are accessible to a wide customer base, not just a niche high-end customer base, but really to everyone. Everyone should have access to safe, nutritious foods across the globe. So scalability is one of the things that we need to overcome to address this. But there are also, you know, other aspects of accessibility, even in terms of consumer perception and education, that we'll need to tackle in order to ensure that alternative foods and cell-based proteins aren't only, you know, consumed by a very small market of people, that if it's desired and if it's wanted, that it's really made accessible to everyone.
You don't hear that enough, actually. So I think that's definitely interesting to think, you know, when we do look at 10, 20, even 30 years down the road, like what will people be eating and how will people get their food? I think it's a very interesting conversation. And I think based off of what you said, it seems like that is a long-term vision to start making that change.
Exactly. And that will really help inform some of the technologies that are being developed. And I think that there are some key questions and even, you know, research that still needs to be done. But, you know, one example around accessibility could be increased shelf life of some of these products, because they are generated in a more sterile environment than the conventional offerings. That has the potential to increase the shelf life, which could mean rather than having to do cold storage and transport, that could be room temperature storage and transport, as well as longer, you know, shelf times, and give more opportunity to go a farther distance. So that's, you know, one potential way to increase accessibility. But the other potential way is to flip that around, and rather than having a centralized manufacturing, have decentralized manufacturing. So basically have smaller plants or bioreactors that are co-located, you know, with the restaurant, co-located right in the supermarket, where these offerings can be made at a smaller scale, but fresh, right where the consumer is going to buy them and bring them home and enjoy them.
I think the idea of decentralized production is something that really everyone in the food industry like geeks out about, but I feel like it's something that is really kind of in its prime spot when you're talking about things like cellular agriculture technologies, such that another thing to think about is that when you think of a traditional brewery, you have these really huge tanks, whereas you don't necessarily need to have one very large tank, but many smaller tanks. And that actually kind of helps with the idea of decentralization.
Exactly.
So yeah, it'll be very interesting. Do you think that there might be like, you know, restaurant hubs, or maybe, you know, a hub within a city where there might be a turtle tree production hub where people go and kind of like, you know, a chef would go to the farmer's market, somebody would go to this turtle tree hub and get their product?
Absolutely. I think that, and this is a future state, but this is something that we should be envisioning and starting to design and really understand what it would take to make this a reality. Absolutely. I think having the, you know, you could almost imagine it as part of the butcher shop, right? Where those products are being cultivated right there. And yes, we would love it to be obviously turtle tree driven and branded, and that the consumer, whether it's the you know, B2C, so the folks going to the market and bringing it home, or also B2B, where it's you know, restaurants or even larger food producers gaining access to those products. So I absolutely do envision that as something that's very transparent and open and accessible, and that people understand and see what the process is and what goes into it.
When we're talking about scaling cellular agriculture, we've seen specifically about scaling cell cultured meat that there are outstanding questions regarding the environmental aspects, energy usage, and things like that. Can you comment on the, I guess, general energy usage and technology that will be going into creating cell ag products at scale? Is it something where the science is pretty much leading to this is definitely going to be more environmentally friendly than traditional animal agriculture, or is it something that's still up in the air?
There are a range of techno-economic and life cycle analyses, and generally it's agreed on that when you compare the envisioned processes now with the current state of technologies for cell-based beef, for example, when you compare that to the beef industry and their environmental footprint, that cell-based and cultivated technologies will be more environmentally friendly. This is in terms of, you know, land usage and water usage, et cetera. Although I will say that many of those analyses point to more sustainable sources of energy as being central to driving down that environmental footprint. But those sustainable sources of energy, that technology exists. So this is not an assumption that is still, you know, up in the air whether or not it could actually come true. We do have, you know, more sustainable energy sources, for example, around solar. So part of it will certainly be location of some of these manufacturing plants and being able to tap in to those sustainable energy sources or set up their own energy sources that are part of the manufacturing plant. When you look at more highly industrialized meats, especially like chicken and pork, that's where there's still, I think, more work to be done to really understand what the comparator will be. And again, there's a lot of assumptions that go into these very longer term forward thinking analyses. You have to carefully look at what are some of the factors that went into those assumptions between the different analyses, because some of them do have different cost and footprint predictions. But again, especially for the case in beef, the story, I believe, is quite clear.
I think that you make a very good point. And even today, if we were to rebuild a facility that has maybe not a cell ag facility, but any type of food production facility, we would be kind of striving to reach some of those new and renewable energy sources. So by default, I guess there's a lot of different factors that are going into making any new facility environmentally friendly. Mm-hmm. Then you add all the benefits of cell ag, and then you actually have a very energy sustainable system.
Exactly. And I think that sustainability is a very important part of this, but it's not the whole story. And it's not the whole motivating force behind it, right? It's also animal welfare and nutrition. And, you know, one of the questions is, you know, can we make animal-based proteins and nutritional sources even healthier than they are? And this is something that companies are looking into. Can we help reduce some of the bad fats, the saturated fats, and increase some of the more beneficial lipids, for example? The other question is, you know, can we make these meat-based foods that people crave, can we make them healthier than some of the plant-based alternatives that are out there? So these are all, you know, it's not just about sustainability. It's also about just ethics and nutrition and really reimagining our whole food system.
Being at kind of larger companies in your career in the past, what's it like shifting over to the startup world? What are some of the, I guess, dynamics that might be very, very different or very, very kind of surprising to you?
That's a great question, Alex. Yes, I did spend the vast majority of my career at a large organization, which was very exciting because a company like Merck KGaA in Darmstadt, Germany, that has three different divisions playing in very different sectors, a huge portfolio of products. There's so much to work on, so many experts. So it can be very exciting working for a big company like that. And transitioning to TurtleTree, to a small, smaller startup, certainly has been a transition for me, but it's something that I've absolutely embraced and has been so exciting and refreshing for a couple of reasons. And one of them, again, is to be focused on something that I and the TurtleTree team really believe in, especially with sustainability at the heart of it. So this is something that we are engineering and designing into these products. It's not just something that is serendipitous, and it's something that we are more purposefully designing in. So that's very important to me. Regarding kind of the startup culture, I love the quick decision making, being able to just reach out to any colleague at any time. Everyone is really open, accessible. And, I recently saw a talk given by Steve Jobs, and he mentioned that, you know, there were no committees in his organization. And I think that's something that's really refreshing. We have no committees at Turtle Tree. It's very much collaborative and open and, ground up kind of approach, which I very much enjoy.
So as we wrap up, I wanted to ask you, for those that are listening, we have a lot of listeners that are either in their graduate studies programs and they're thinking about getting into the field. We also have listeners that are not in the sciences, but they have strong connections to animal welfare concerns. For, I guess, these two different types of groups, what advice do you have for them to get involved in the industry?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it is important to get involved. And, if you have any questions or aspirations or ideas, to bring those forward. And there are so many different great forums to do so, in terms of, academic groups, universities like UC Davis, Tufts University, that are really becoming active in this space, organizations like the Good Food Institute. They put out a lot of external facing educational literature, which I think has been very helpful for people. Podcasts like this one, and the conferences like the Cultured Meat Symposium. Those are all great opportunities to get educated and start to network. And that is probably the start of it, is just reaching out and building the network and getting involved. And then around, more practical experience, there are educational programs. Again, universities are starting to really look at this field and set up specific curricula that are focused on this. And then also looking at your previous experiences, and even if it's not in cellular agriculture space, what are those skill sets that you can bring to the table, and where do you want to, steer your career? Those are conversations that can be had with experts and people that are involved right now through networking, going to conferences, and just reaching out to companies that you're interested in. So, for example, if you're interested in learning more about Turtle Tree, then jump on LinkedIn, reach out to us, jump onto our website, and drop us a note and just start a conversation, because now is the time. We're still early on this journey. The wholesale ag industry is still early on it. Now is the time to think about all of the different perspectives, bring ideas together, and just really have these, open conversations. So I would say, we would love for everyone, experts, technology, market experts, regulatory consumers, to just jump on and join us in this journey and evolve future foods with us.
Great. And that's turtletree.com. And we'll put that link in the show notes. Is Turtle Tree hiring right now, perhaps?
Absolutely. Yes, we are. So for sure, we're always on the lookout for talent, especially as we consider our, commercial readiness. These are things that we're always looking to build our team around: technology development, regulatory, commercial, and would love to hear what your big idea is, and how you want to become a member or just contribute to the field.
Aletta, thank you so much for joining us on the Cultured Meat and Future Food Show.
Thanks, Alex. It was really a pleasure.
This is your host, Alex, and we look forward to seeing you on our next episode.